It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, and Rob Lewis, presented as always by our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions, where they've been local and trusted since 1999. That phone number today for a free estimate, that is 865-524-5888, or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We'll start our mailbag questions with DMB Vol 1985. Austin, he's going to make you work here from the top. Name the top one to two prospects on the board that Tennessee is prioritizing in the 26 class in the following positions. Don't list current commits as options. I understand this is February and there's a lot of time left. He basically lists all the positions except quarterback and tight end. So we'll start with the running back.
Well, Savion Hyder, you know, is at the top of the list. He and Amari Latimer.
I'm taking notes, by the way.
Yeah. Wide receivers. I think they're only going to take one more as long as they don't have any defections, and that would be Tristan Keyes would be the top of the list. Outside of that, you know, I think you're looking at, you know, further evaluation this spring. Offensive linemen, there's several. I mean, there's Brock Colajay, there's Grant Weiss, Emmanuel Tucker, Bear McCorder. They're going to still recruit Brandon Anderson. There's the Toa Katoa kid, the big Polynesian kid. Defensive lineman. There's Keyshawn Stancil. There's J.J. Finch. Edges, Rodney Dunham. Zach Groves is an in-state kid. Dre Quinn, Anthony Jones. Linebacker, you know, Braden Rouse, T.J. White, kid from Mississippi. They're going to swing at Tyler Atkinson. To me, that one's far-fetched, but they'll swing there. Rodney Colton just was in town and decommitted from South Carolina. Corners, you got in-state kids, Justin Humphreys, Caden Harris, Jordan Edmonds. Safeties, Craig Tutt, who's also a guy that could be like a boot kid who could play safety, could play nickel. You got Jordan Smith. And then you got Joel Wyatt and some of those athletes. So that's kind of just a rundown of just some, you know, initial names at each position. Obviously, Tennessee's pretty set at tight end and pretty set at quarterback.
Well done. Now, that is how you start a podcast right there. I mean, that was good stuff.
Hey, also credit Matt Ray. Matt Ray also – Matt knows this board better than I do. So, you know, that was a collaborative effort between the two of us.
I'm sorry. Matt Ray's not here, so – I mean,
he's not, but I'm giving him credit. I'm not taking credit where it's not due. And I could have probably told you 70% of those, but at least 30% I could not have told you, and Matt filled in the blanks. So, kudos to him.
Well, good job, Matt. All right, let's go to Sam Smith, 2233. Ramey or Rob, trip to Norman for the SEC Big 12 Challenge. What is the scout on the Fighting Porter Mosers?
They got to win a little better in February, I guess, the last couple of weeks than they were to start the season. But, man, I mean, just a wild January for them. I mean, they won Atlantis. I mean, they were ranked the top 10 in the preseason, and then they just, you know, fall on their face to start SEC play. I mean, they're playing better. It's going to be a tough road trip. As anything is in this league, they've got one of the best freshmen guard, Jeremiah Fears. But man, I mean, not done a complete deep dive into Oklahoma yet before the weekend. But man, watch the rebounding. They are not a good rebounding team at all. I mean, they're bad. Probably one of the worst in the SEC. That might be a little strong. They struggle. Watch that one. You know, that's kind of been a barometer for Tennessee in almost every SEC game. So. I would watch that one. Really good freshman in Jeremiah Fears. Pretty good vet. And Jalen Moore. Good, really good player. Kind of their veteran leader. Watch him. Really good freshman. Watch the boards in this one. I'll be again. That's been a barometer for Tennessee, and Oklahoma is not good.
Kane, Alberto Ozuna, what are your expectations for him? I think he's going to play. I think he's going to be in this lineup. You know, he's an option at first base, and he hit the practice field for the first time with Tennessee on Tuesday, hit a bomb as well, played a little bit of first base. But he's primarily been a DH at North Carolina for 3 years. He's played a little first, but, you know, he's an option there. He's going to compete there. But I expect – I'm not saying from day one because, again, this is a super late addition of the club, and, of course, he's still got a clear eligibility, which – is expected, but you know how the NCAA is. You know, is that going to come in 5 minutes from now, or is that going to come 2 weeks from now and you miss the first little bit of the season? I don't know. We'll see. He will clear eligibility. It's just a matter of when's it going to happen. I expect his bat to be in the order for sure. And I expect him to be a main contributor. I think eventually he's going to have a spot in that order because they want that right-handed presence. He's got power. He's hit for a decent average. He's not a very good average hitter, but he has hit for a decent average one season throughout his college tenure. I think he hit like 280 something, but you know, the bombs are there, the RBI are there. And so I expect him to be, you know, fifth or sixth in the order, hitting from the right side eventually. Is there a time frame for when the NCAA would decide on giving players 5 years to play five?
I don't know of one, and the more people you talk to, it feels like it's further down the road, which, again, my question about this, Austin, has always been, will they do that early enough that it affects outgoing players, or will they make that decision late in the summertime when those outgoing players have already signed contracts on a professional rank somewhere else and have moved on? And I think that's – it feels like that's more likely than them making that decision here in the next – 2.5 months for somebody to really have a decision who's a senior now about being able to come back for another year. But we'll see. It's the NCAA.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way. And it would make sense that, like, they know if they do it now, all those kids that have played four and could come back are, you know, there's a portion of them that are going to come back. And then that would definitely benefit Tennessee's basketball team. Go ahead, Rob.
I'm just going to say it'll be the same way next spring. In the spring after that, but like Hubbard said, it's NCAA. AP, I agree with you. They're going to drag their feet because all those kids that have played 4 years are going to come back, but all those kids next spring that have played 4 years are going to come back.
Yeah, I think if you make that, I think they're just trying to read their mind, which is impossible.
You can all schools can plan a little better if it's not.
Yeah, if you make that decision July 1st or August 1st, then. You have a basketball, let's say basketball or football, anybody, you've got months to figure out how to roster manage. Whereas if you do it right now, it's of great benefit to Rick Barnes because he's got seven players. I mean, he has a depleted roster. But what if you're at a full roster size and you've signed three people and four guys want to come back and you're over your numbers? Who are you cutting? I think that's what the NCAA is probably – trying to look at and think about. I don't know that there's ever a good time to do these things. I mean, it's going to come at some point, I think, but I don't know that they're trying to squeeze it in now where it affects current guys. It would be more of an effect moving forward as opposed to retroactive.
Let's use Justin or let's use Jordan Ganey as an example here. What's stopping, you know, if Tennessee feels that way and Jordan Ganey's like, you know, they're probably going to do this in the summer. I'll win this. Let's, you know, I'm not going to sign any kind of professional contract or anything like that stuff. And he just kind of stands pat and waits, and they put it through. I think he'd have a really good chance to win his case, you know, based on that and be eligible next fall. But who's willing to wait's the question. Not many people are willing to do that.
Well, I think based on the NCAA's track record in court, if you had 712 kids sign for professional contracts and then sue to come back, they would all the NCAA would lose them all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I just feel like that they're trying to.
Well, I think they're exactly doing what you're saying.
I think they're trying to look.
I agree.
Forward, not as a retro thing.
I know the people I have talked to, and I'm sure you guys say, don't expect it to come this spring.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of where it's at. Where I think it's at, and I don't know that there's ever a good time, and they're never going to win a court case. So whenever it happens is whenever it happens. I just don't know that it's going to come into play to affect the seniors right now, the spring sports seniors, or you know. Like if you put it in place now, how many is there football guys who come back, you know, and how does that affect your roster, you know, numbers wise, all those types of things, you know, do they look at it and say, hey, let's give it to you at the start of the academic year, you know, or the, you know, the July or August. And then, you know, what you're looking at to manage, how many do you want to sign? What your portal numbers look like, all that type of stuff versus, oh, wait a minute, I got 10 guys who can come back, and I didn't know they could come back, but I'm over my numbers. Who am I cutting? What am I doing? And all that kind of stuff.
Nashville 615's got a couple. How was Tony V so able to stack his roster with talent and depth compared to Rick Barnes? He's been doing this even before he won a championship last year. Trey Lipscomb sitting comes to mind. I mean, I'll speak on Tony V real quick. He's, as you mentioned, he's been doing this throughout his career. He did this at Arkansas. I mean, he's been known as a recruiter. And he's young. He connects with the players. He's full of energy, wears his emotions on his sleeve. Players like to play for him. You look at the track record, no matter where he's been, he's been a part of a winning program. Even at Tennessee, you just continue to win games and you play an exciting brand of baseball. Then you start hosting these regionals. You go to these supers. You start going to Omaha. And, of course, you win the whole thing last year. And then you look at the MLB draft. I mean, look at how many players Tony's put in the draft and how they've gotten drafted and guys who are, you know, on their way to the show right now. So I just think it's a combination of all those things. You can sign a bigger class. It's going to be interesting to see how many they sign moving forward because, you know, that roster is going to get cut down to 34 in 2026. So that'll be interesting. But you can sign a bigger class, and the philosophy is – you take them and figure it out, you know, when they're on campus, or you take them just to have them in case the draft doesn't work out, because some of these guys will get drafted, of course. A combination of all those things. I mean, Tony V is just a really, really good recruiter. And, oh, yeah, Josh Elander is a very good recruiter as well. That's kind of the baseball side of things, Rob. What about basketball?
Just, I mean, I just think it's talking about nine players. I mean, that's an anomaly. That's not going to happen again, but I don't think. But, I mean, just – you're not going to stack the roster NCAA basketball. I mean, with 13 guys, I mean, you know, with 10 guys anymore, I don't think with player movement, the way guys can move, I just think it's going to be tough to stack the roster. Now, I mean, I think people would be critical of Rick. This was not, you know, he didn't think that they were going to come up with, you know, have seven players for Florida. And I don't think you're going to catch them like this again, but as far as stacking the roster in the NIL era, I think that's going to be tough.
Yeah. I think the other thing, too, with baseball, and I'll give Tony a lot of credit for this. I think all of the legal benefits and ways that baseball is done at Tennessee is better than it's done at some other places. Amenities, right? Like things that they do. I mean, finding ways to get as much scholarship help as you can get and trying to, not everybody's on a full ride, right? But there's some different things they can do. I think that they found ways to do financially to help guys get more money. They travel well, you know. They are treated much like they're treated a much bigger deal, I think, at Tennessee than they are at some other baseball places.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know how a lot of things are done at other the NIL. Baseball aspect of Tennessee is, I mean, there's some places where it's just an afterthought. Am I wrong?
No, 100%. I mean, it's very
like
much.
A baseball coach goes to the collective, wants some NIL money. They're like, get out.
No, I mean, it is absolutely a priority.
Tennessee, I mean, that's not the case at Tennessee. I mean, I don't mean this. It's almost like kind of women's basketball in the 1980s, a little bit. I mean, it feels like.
Which goes back again to, can you be an everything school in NIL?
Sure. You know, and I do think that Tony should get a lot of credit for the ability to manage big numbers and keeping guys happy and keeping guys engaged. Now, they play more games, which gives them a chance to play more people than you get into necessarily in basketball. But I think you got to give credit to his culture that a guy like Trey Lipscomb would sit and wait, right? And some guys would take and look at, you know, how all this works. And I think at the end of the day, it's just about winning. And Tony's brutally honest with people, and just like Rick's brutally honest. And it's, you know, if you don't like it, Tony doesn't care if you leave, because I've got people that want to come play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean. You know, if I'm Dalton Bargo and I'm sitting there and I'm the first baseman, and I look up and they're bringing in the first baseman, a guy who plays first base from North Carolina. Like, wait a minute, what are we doing here? But it's all for the greater good of where they're at right now, which is a credit to the culture that he's created in that building. And I think it's a little bit easier to manage some of that because of the way players are treated, because it's not as equal across the board in that sport as it is in college basketball. A kid can go, I mean, Tobey Awaka could go to Arizona and he's going to have all the benefits of things that you have at Tennessee. If you leave Tennessee in baseball and you go outside the SEC, life might be a little bit different, right, Eric? I mean, is that fair or is that not fair? If I'm overstepping my bounds and I'm speaking out of turn, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think that's – I mean, from what I know, I think that's completely accurate. And, yeah, it's tough to play for Tony at times, but, like, little things like he travels so many. He doesn't travel every single player on the roster, but his travel roster is probably bigger than anybody else in the SEC because he likes to reward players. He likes to have the team all together, just little things like that. But I think there's also mutual respect there. I mean, they brought in this Alberto Ozuna guy, and, I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day, 100% they didn't promise him anything. They just said, hey, you want to come in here and compete? You want to come here and try to get some at-bats? Come on. It's open if you want to. If you can make it work, we'll make it work, you know? And they didn't tell Dalton Bargo to scoot over. It's, you know, Hunter High and Levi Clark and some of those guys probably weren't too happy about it, but it's a level of competition. That's just kind of what's been created here. So move on here.
And the alternative for those guys, too, is go ride on a bus and low-A rookie ball if you don't go to college, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
terrible.
I mean, there's some benefit to being in a college baseball program, particularly one that has all the resources you need to develop your game for the draft 2 years later.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, it's got to be the worst life ever to be in like low minor league baseball on the bus, you know, play a five game set, travel 8 hours on the bus, start another five game set the next day. I mean, that's how it used to be in the Southern League. I think they went to three game series here lately, but just awful. Rank these positions most desperate in need of spring practice development. Linebacker, wide receiver, offensive line, defensive back.
Well, for me, it's the offensive line and wide receivers, just because you have a turnover of people there, mm-hmm. A greater turnover of people there. And you're going to have to play young people at the wide receiver position, Austin. And then even though maybe you're not going with high school guys across the board or a bunch of high school guys on the offensive line, you are bringing in a new interior. And so for me, it's those two positions.
Yeah, I think you want to continue to grow, especially at receiver. I mean, I think this is a big spring for Brazel, Staley, Matthews, obviously the new guys. But, I mean, the ones that were here a year ago, they've got to build off of what they accomplished last year or build off, you know, the growth they've made maybe late in the year. So, for me, it's definitely wide receiver. Offensive line, yes, more so not for this year but for the future. And then I would go linebacker. I think it's a big spring for Edwin Spillman. Like, I think for, you know, again, we talked about this on Tuesday's pod with Ethan Davis's comments. Like, I think this is a big spring for Edwin Spillman. And you got to figure out where you are at corner, you know, the defensive back, you know, especially with McCoy hurt and, you know, rehabbing. Like, what does Trey Poteet look like? You know, what does, you know, some of those younger corners, Caleb Beasley, all those players, Ty Redmond, what do they look like? And do you feel like they can help you? Because if you don't feel like they can help you to start the season, then, I mean, do you not have to go and look at bringing somebody in the spring window? That's kind of why spring practice, I think, is big for some of these positions to go, okay, do we need somebody here or do we not?
When assistant coaches leave, why do they think Heupel is hesitant to acquire experienced assistants?
I think he's protective offensively. I think he wants people that know that, I mean, based on his history at Tennessee, I think it's safe to say, Rob, that he wants people who can slide in that knows his offense. And that's why he's promoted when he's had three opportunities on the offensive side of the ball. He's promoted to the tight end position, the wide receiver position, and an offensive coordinator. I think it's continuity in his system. It's where he feels most comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything to add to that, but I mean, I'm not being critical. I'm just interested to see how it works long-term. I mean, I think the jury's still out. And again, I'm not being critical, but I mean, you look at Ohio State and, you know, they're losing coordinators to the NFL and $4 million contracts. This, you know, is anybody would offer, you know, and Tim Banks, you know, certainly had opportunities, but again, I'm not being critical. I'm just saying I think that's one thing to keep in mind. I mean, I think fans have questions, and I think that's fair. I mean, is that going to work long term?
Rob, answer this one. This is from Kerry the Fod. A couple fill-in-the-blank questions. Nico takes the next step if blank.
Man, I mean, I would like to say see the field better, but I mean, you don't know exactly, you know, what he's seeing in the film room, but it feels like, you know, to me that there was, you know, I don't think he panics or pulls it down too quickly. I just feel like there's more out there. And I would say you probably could say that for 95% of the guys that are redshirt freshman quarterbacks in college. I would say see the field better.
Austin, you do this one. David Sanders' true freshman season is the most important since blank.
Woo.
I love this question, by the way.
Well, I looked at it last night. And I started thinking, and I'm like, if we're doing offensive line, I would probably tell you Trey Smith or Juwan James. I just don't – I mean, Wanye and Darnell played a lot as freshmen, but, they were just kind of like, we don't have anybody else, just throw them in there.
And I think that's the part that's the interesting question is you start looking back, okay, what freshmen started? Okay, I can give you some freshmen that started, but they didn't start on very good teams. They didn't start on teams with any kind of real expectations. So now you're potentially starting a freshman at right tackle on a team that's coming off the playoff that –
Doesn't have to be an O lineman though. Can it be?
Right, that's what I'm saying. I mean, so
Gary Berry.
I mean, yeah. I mean, would you put it there? Would you put it? Would you compare it to a quarterback? Would you go back to 04 at the quarterback deal? I mean, the only difference in why I wonder about this question is again the expectations where Tennessee football is right now compared to when some of these other guys who played as freshmen who got a starting. I mean, look at Bryce Thompson, Alante Taylor. Those guys were starters the day they got on campus
because
they didn't have any other options. But they were also on teams that didn't have any expectations of being very good, right?
Yeah, I mean, Eric went to the SEC championship game.
Right.
I would compare it up to the last freshman quarterback. So I think 04 is fair. Like, because, again, a lot of those guys that you mentioned started on bad teams, as you pointed out. Not Eric Berry, but – the Wanyes, the Darnells, the Juwan James. I mean, those were
again, those are all O-linemen. Both the 04 and 07 seasons that we're referencing, whether it be the quarterbacks or EB, Tennessee went to Atlanta those years.
So again, I mean, I think it's a fascinating question because it's important from the standpoint of, to me, I look at it from the standpoint of where what you're expecting out of this team to continue to be a potential playoff caliber team with the parts they have around them coming back. So it's an interesting question.
I thought Rob was going to pull Dontavius Blair, but
number one JUCO offensive tackle recruit in the country. AP.
Ivel's offense takes the next step. If blank
Nico takes a step,
explosive plays. They get more explosive. I know I talk about the red zone all the time, but they got to get back to, They got to get away from 12, 13 play drives. They got to get back to some 5-6 play drives on a more consistent basis.
And finally, blank leads the Vols in receiving yards in 23-25. I mean, I'm going to say Boo Carter, right, AP?
No, in receiving yards?
I'm kidding. I mean, Mike Matthews.
Only if Peyton's coaching quarterbacks.
Yeah. I mean, it's either Mike Matthews or Brazel, I would assume. I mean, Mike Matthews is probably a safe bet. I mean, or unless you're banking on that second year leap in the system for Brazel.
I would go Matthews, I think, AP.
Yeah.
Matthews or Brazel.
I missed Denarius Moore. What would be your starting five for UT, all-star team made up of players from the 21st century, Rob?
Chris Lofton, pick number one. And, he may not – Ron Slay for Tennessee Sports –
Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer, yeah. Ron Slay. Give me the Slay dog somewhere. I mean, we're not going to play great defense.
Grant Williams.
Probably. Grant. We're not going to have a center. The only one – I mean, Dalton Connect, obviously. The only one – who have I got? Slay, Lofton.
Poor.
Grant Williams.
CJ Watson.
The only one I would debate here, this is the hard – at point guard. I mean, if I could have, like, Kennedy Chandler – like when he was 21 years old, that's who I would take. But I'm not taking freshman Kennedy Chandler over Zakai or CJ Watson. CJ Watson, Zakai Ziegler, that would be my point guard.
No Major Wingate. I am just.
So who are you taking between Watson and Ziegler, Rob?
I don't know. If CJ could have played 4 years for like Bruce, remember we saw CJ play 1 year.
I know.
For Bruce. I mean, CJ was a really good player. If CJ had played on good basketball teams with a good coach for 4 years, I think he would have had a great career. I'm taking CJ.
I would too, based off your lineup, which needs a little bit more hype. It's not very, very big. And
nah, we're just trying to score.
We're just playing five out and not worrying about defense.
I mean, how many screens is Slay going to set on that team? I mean, seriously.
I would have went Josh Tabb, Duke Cruz.
And the better question is, who's the all character team? Who is the all?
Whoa.
Who's the all character team for the 2000s? That podcast will cost you $9.95 yeah. with commentary.
Yeah, commentary. That one's going out to the private email list only, is where that one's going
with
out.
With guest commentary from Pee Wee Gash.
Pee Wee Gash. Eric doesn't know who that is.
Oh, the Pee Wee. I love it.
And what about Eddie DeBrower? Eddie DeBrower.
All right, UT champions over under 17 home runs for Alberto Ozuna. I will go under for right now because he's only hit the over one time in his career at the D1 level. But I think he has a good year. Who leads the team in OBP? Is it going to be Jay Abernathy? I think that's a good pick. I'm going to go with Gavin Keelan because he just gets on base. He's going to hit for probably one of the best averages on the team. He's a double machine. I'm going to go with Gavin Keelan. Bud Fox, name someone on the football team you consider a sneaky good football player. No firm criteria. That this isn't about projecting NFL talent or under the radar. Just who's a good football player.
You can't say Miles Gitzelman anymore.
That's immediately who I thought of, but I was like, would be this time last year. Would be the answer
after he led the team in touchdown catchers.
I think a sneaky good football player, if he stays healthy, is DeShone Bishop. I don't think he's the flashiest guy in the world, but I think he is he's a better football player than I think some people consider him, because I think he's got the label of quote walk on is the label that he had. I think he's a better player. I think he's a better player than people give him credit for if he can stay healthy.
You're making me hungry. I was only going to walk ons. I'm a butter chicken.
You'll be there in a few minutes, I'm sure. It's on whatever your weekly rotation is for lunch. I'm gonna buy you bologna and a loaf of bread and show you how much money you can save every week staying at your house and eating lunch.
Shut the up. Question is, who's going
to
join?
My wife doesn't listen to this podcast.
Hubbard, you think AP's buying his lunch? Good gracious.
Sometimes. There's some of them I think that are going to be sneaky good, and we just don't know it yet. I think Braylon Staley, depending on kind of what kind of boom he goes, if he were to go, and kind of accelerate this spring, we talked about leading the team in receiving. We all know that slot position does that pretty well. How good is he?
Well, I think you can say that about a lot of young players who haven't played yet, right? I mean, Ed Reese Farouk could be a quote sneaky good football player. He just hasn't played enough to know. That's why I went with Bishop, because he's played meaningful snaps, and I don't think people view him as a guy who's anything other than just kind of a guy. I think he's better than just a guy. That was my point. But I, to your point, AP, I think you can find, I think DeShone Brame is a sneaky good football player, but we haven't seen what he's going to be yet, right? Yeah,
to be honest with you, I think that's the – I mean, like, I think that you're either talking about, like Nico, Arian Carter, some of those names. You can't throw those in sneaky good football players, right? At least I don't think you can. And then otherwise, those other spots are players we've not really seen. So, I'm not sure. I mean, I can tell you that, the staff feels good about this guy. They think he's, going to be really good. But, I mean, we don't know.
But they feel good about everybody.
Not everybody.
I do think it's a hard – it's a bit of a hard question to answer. If you – unless you really go the young route. I know there's some people who think Cole Harrison's going to be a better player than people thought when he was signed. That's I haven't seen I enough say. To know that he – whether he's a, quote, sneaky good football player or not. But there's some people who feel like they got a better player than what the ranking said or people thought of him when he signed late to Tennessee.
Well, that could be the case with Jesse Perry, right? But, I mean, you got to see if he can play.
Right. You got to get on the field.
All right, we got plenty more questions. But first, let's get a word from Austin Price on our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Life happens, and damage to your home can be extremely stressful. That's why it's important to find someone who offers efficient, quality work with financing options. Exterior Home Solutions, they value not only family, but community. And they're who I call when life happens, and you should too.
Give Exterior Home Solutions a call today for a free estimate at 865-524-5888 online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. All right, time for the annual question. This is from Pine. What are some of the first impressions of the athleticism of the early enrollees?
Who's the Woody Quinn, Austin Price?
You know, I mean, Ethan Utley flash. I mean, you really can just go like back to even like the week of practice where they worked on, you know, a lot of hands-on, you know, time with the coaches. You know, Ethan Utley was one that flashed. David Sanders obviously flashed. DeJuan Morris. I mean, DeJuan Morris earned, I think, Scout Teamer of the Week or whatever that week he was here. I mean, he obviously was one that impressed. You know, Desan Brahm looks the part. Isaiah Campbell, same thing. So, I mean, like, there's several that you know, Tennessee feels good about out of this class of, you know, really, really solid football players.
CN31, what is the deal with Pierce dropping in mocks? He was still very good. He was held so many times. He will still be a game-changer top that can affect many games. Is this the NFL team's purposely feeding bad information, hoping he falls to mid to late first round instead of top 10, get steal?
I think there's a lot of questions that have to be answered about James Pierce over the next 60 days.
Who's seen him in a mock that was in the top 10?
Well, I think everybody goes back to before the season. He was ranked the number one player in the country.
I've seen him at all in first round all over the place.
I think he's like Jalen Carter, where there's going to be enough of like stuff out there about him behind the scenes where he may fall some, but then a team that's already good ends up with what would be like a top 10 talent in the first round. And if James Pierce puts it together, he's going to be, you know, just really, really good at the next level. Like I thought Derek Barnett, obviously better college player than James Pierce, a more productive player than James Pierce, but I think James Pierce can be a better pro than Derek Barnett, at least to this point for Derek Barnett. I think that he has the capability to end up putting himself in a better spot by actually falling a little bit.
Well, and I think you've had some edge rushers who have popped up, who have crawled up. Like the Penn State guy was not the off-season chatter from a bunch of people. Abdul Carter, he's now in the top five in a lot of people's mocks. You know, is the first edge taken. Pierce did not put up the number of sacks. You know, so just the stats on it doesn't look as good. Now, when you do a deep dive on the tape, I think people are going to like a lot of things. But there's a great mystery with James Pierce. There's a real unknown because he has no brand. He has no – I mean, like, he didn't talk. He's nobody knows anything about James Pierce. I mean, and so I think that mystery part of him has people wondering, okay, wait a minute. Why did he not do media interviews? Why was he just kind of a, you know, what is the stigma there? Is there something that we have to get answered? I think, as Austin mentioned, the biggest thing for James Pierce, I don't think he physically has to show a whole lot. I think it's how he interacts with GMs and scouts and, you know, what's the feedback from people about just kind of who he is as a human being on and off the field, not about his raw physical talents, because that's pretty obvious.
The NFL will do a deep dive on you. I can promise you the NFL teams have watched Ball Club Confidential because they can't find him talking and communicating anywhere else.
I mean, I've looked at two boxes this week. The Ringer has him 15, and The Athletic, I think, had him 25.
Right, which I think is where I've always kind of felt that was where he was going to be, unless he just had a blow-up monster year. But I think everybody got caught up in the PFF last June or last May that had him the number one overall prospect in the draft, like the first player taking at any position, which created a bar that probably, I mean, I don't think anybody felt like he was ever going to be that guy unless he went robbed for a record number of sacks and just completely dominated games. Which
PFF got their click quote of that day just from Tennessee fans.
They did. They got a lot of views.
Couple of questions here from Athron. Anything happened yesterday on National Signing Day that we should talk about?
No. And I talked to him. He says it's Athrun. He wants you to pronounce it with an
oom. Athrun?
I'm just playing with you.
Athrun, Athron.
I mean, the question is from yesterday is, what's the point of the day?
Yeah,
and I think that's something that has to be continued to look.
What was the point, Hubs? Tell me.
Well, I mean, who made news, right?
Nobody.
I mean, I mean, it was a national holiday 7-8 years ago, and it's, you know, now it's just a it's
Michigan made news by getting Ty Haywood.
Yeah, I mean, and there's very few of those that happen. So
I've seen two national football reporters tweet yesterday that they didn't even know it was signing day until they saw tweets about it.
So I mean, the question is, do you continue to do that day? And that's a whole topic for another day, but I think that's something that's always looked at.
What is the early prediction ceiling and floor for baseball this year? I mean, floor is hosting a regional. I think where you're at, given your program, you're getting into regional play and you're most likely going to be hosting a regional. Ceiling is winning the whole thing because, I mean, I used to be kind of tentative about saying all that. And, you know, it's so hard to get to Omaha, and it is, but Tennessee's gotten to Omaha 3 of the last 4 years and they won the whole thing last year. So, ceiling is hosting a regional, floor is hosting regional. Ceiling is winning another national championship, in my opinion. It's not easy, certainly, but this program's proved that it can go through the ringer.
Well, floor for me is making the championship series, and ceiling is winning.
So. Okay. Current prediction for how far the basketball team will get in the tournament this year?
You'd be second weekend.
Oh. All right. One player you're keeping a close eye on with spring practice that is not named Nico.
Edwin Spillman. I'm going to beat that drum.
Give me a wide receiver.
Yeah, same here. I was going to say Mike Matthews.
Staley, Brazel.
Give me Mike Matthews after the drama.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, give me David Sanders. Let's see what he looks like in extended work. Andrew says Dunkin' Donuts or Krispy Kreme.
No, this is a great one. This is a great – people don't understand what you've unlocked with Hubs here. Hubs is not a Krispy Kreme guy. He loves Dunkin' Donuts. I'm going to counter with that. Neither one, Duck Donuts.
Dunkin' Donuts, and I'll fight you on it otherwise. So I'll Barney Fife you on that one.
Have you had Duck Donuts, Hubber?
Yeah, that, I mean, listen, and they're fine, but I can't stop anywhere in America and get a Dunkin' Donut. I can stop anywhere in America and get a Dunkin' Donut. And if you want me to rattle off what flavors are available, what donuts are available at Dunkin' Donuts,
while variety, we're here,
I can run through.
Depends on what time of day you go, whether they have them thawed out or not.
The one in Carthage is the best. At that truck stop in Carthage, the self-service is the best Dunkin' Donuts ever. I stop there every time I go through Nashville. I will be there next week.
Loves or pilot?
There's still a former Dunkin' employee who's in therapy right now that used to work the right out Turkey Creek Dunkin' Donuts, that they were out of donut holes one night. It's maybe the angriest I've ever seen ever. Maybe.
So here's
I think it might have been during the groomers.
Here's my it might have been during the groomers time. Here's where the love affair for Dunkin' Donuts started for me. Dunkin' Donuts used to have a place at the bottom of the hill below Fulton High School, right there at St. Mary's Hospital. Okay. When I was 9 years old, I spent 5 weeks of my life at St. Mary's after a foot injury. And the breakfast stuff at the hospital was so bad that people felt sorry for me, that I literally had nurses who were coming on for the 7 a.m. shift would stop and bring me Dunkin' Donuts for breakfast, like every day. That's where my love affair for Dunkin' Donuts started, and that's where it will continue for forever.
And Dunkin' you would think you would pay that forward by bringing us Dunkin' Donuts.
You don't like them. You don't like Dunkin' Donuts.
Dunkin' Donuts. I do. I'm with Chris Lawton, though. When the light's on at Krispy Kreme, those that now Krispy Kreme, no light on, no. But like light on, yes. But I'm gonna tell you, I'm a big fan of the Duck Donuts. I love the Yellow Cake Donuts, the Peanut Butter Paradise at Duck Donuts. Dude, that is a dangerous combination for me, and I do not need to go there. I already weigh enough. Don't need to weigh anymore.
While we're on the subject, the second part of Johnny Major's Ghost wants to know, and this is kind of – I feel like this is kind of a spinoff from the Monday Night Chat because we just completely went off and started talking about best fast food chicken spots. Best fast food burger. Go.
Rob doesn't eat fast food, so he can't participate in this answer.
Burger. You know,
I mean, I'll eat it in necessity, but not a lot.
Oh, you're an Arby's guy. You're getting a roast beef sandwich if you're on the
road. If there's a gun to my head and there's options, I'm getting Arby's for sure.
I want
to
say
if I've got AP tied in the trunk.
I mean, I'll go Baconator or Wendy's because I do think that they're the meat's not frozen type stuff.
AP, Wendy's, Pals, Freddy's. Where are you going?
Pals. It's Pals.
Okay, there you go. There's your answer, Eric Kane.
I think Freddy's is sneaky good, though.
I first thought of Whataburger, but I think that's just because it's not here and I don't get it. I think In-N-Out? It was here. I wouldn't say that.
I would go In-N-Out, Pals, Whataburger's down here, and then it drops to the Wendy's of the world.
See, I've had In-N-Out one time and I'm just like, yeah, whatever. I don't see what all the fuss is about.
In-N-Out's like Cane's from a standpoint of like, you know, they don't have like a big menu. It's kind of like they specialize in a couple of things and that's it. Like they don't like work. Yeah. But we're not trying to venture out and try to do anything crazy.
Johnny Major's ghost taking John Chavis out of the equation. Who was the best defensive coordinator at Tennessee over the last 30 years? Also taking David Cutcliff out of consideration. Who's the best offensive coordinator?
Defensive coordinator is Justin Wilcox. I don't see a debate over the last 30 years other than Justin Wilcox. Offensive coordinator. There was a stretch where I thought Chaney was good as an offensive coordinator. I don't think Randy Sanders got enough credit for being a good play caller. I don't think Randy's attention to detail was good enough at times on a day-to-day basis, but on game day, I thought Randy was a really good play caller. Chime on in, anybody. That's where I'm at.
I mean, defense coordinator, I mean, Wilcox, but, you know, I think Tim Banks is right there based off what he inherited and what he's been able to get out of the group. And then I thought John Jancic was a sneaky good defensive coordinator that people just don't talk about enough.
Eric, I know it's not your fault, but the more fun question is worst. Way more.
Oh, Sal Cincere.
Sal Cincere, for sure. I mean, I remember that.
Wasted a really good offense.
Unbelievable. How many more years did Derek Neely have if they have an average SEC defense that year?
Oh, I mean, you know,
they win 9 games pretty easy.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, no
question. With an average SEC defense.
Eric, rate the best coordinators at Carson Newman the last 8
years. I
wouldn't be able to.
I'll tell you who else was pretty good offensive
coordinator. Mike Turner, number one. Go ahead.
Pretty good offensive coordinator was Mike DeBoer.
Yeah.
Mike DeBoer people just crapped on that.
I would certainly put him in that category in conversation. He did a nice job at Tennessee.
They averaged 30 plus points a game.
Here's the question, though. Take Golish out because he was here for 2 years. The second year he was here, they put up PlayStation numbers. Take him out. Everybody knows, everybody loves Golish. Name a coordinator that Tennessee fans have just been like, oh, I love that guy. Like, you know, they got disenchanted with David Cutcliffe. They got with Chief. I mean, like, it didn't matter like how much success you had. People just get. You know,
they weren't winning. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So like,
yes,
there was a reason to be unhappy every year. There was a reason to be unhappy every year.
For the last 15, but even before then, when Phillip was going to Atlanta once every 3 years, like people were still frustrated with Thurman Chavis and David Cutcliffe. Sure.
But that was the new car syndrome. That was the Leafs car. They just wanted something new. You know, and then they got something new, and it was like, we won. I mean, where's Monty Kiffin as a defensive coordinator? Yep. I mean, that was a hot minute, right? Wasn't here very long. Where was he? I mean, what do you like him or not? Lane was a good play caller. I mean, what they did that 1 year, they were not that good of a team, and they figured out a way to be a good team that 1 year. So, I mean, you got to put those in there. I mean, there's more debates there than just Justin Wilcox or just Randy Sanders. I mean, when you start looking at the names, there have been some better guys than probably have gotten credit for, you know, why they were here.
We'll get a couple more here as we end nearing the end of the show. Joe Litz, thinking about Heupel's success up to this point and what got you to believe to be realistic in the near future. What former SEC head coach would you compare Josh Heupel to right now? The poster says Mark Richt comes to mind, but hoping Heupel has more of a killer mentality than Mark Richt had.
He's coached 4 seasons. I don't know. I mean, Mark Richt coached a decade plus. Just appreciate where he's brought the program to over the last 4 years, and then. You know, the challenge for everybody is sustaining it. So I don't have a comparison because I've got to see the sustainability of it and what it looks like. You know, we use this analogy all the time. It's when you go to the golf course and you're trying to break 100. If you put some effort into it, you accomplish that goal pretty quickly. The challenge is to get to the top, near the top, and stay there. and sustain that. And, you know, that's Josh Heupel's challenge moving forward, in my opinion.
I mean, listen, if Josh Heupel is Mark Richt, then that means he's going to win multiple SEC titles. So, you know, that's – I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? I get what the poster's comparing, you know, because Richt didn't – he was nice, but he couldn't get over the hump to get to a national title. But he won multiple SEC titles. And if you can win the SEC title in this era, that means you're right there with a chance. So, again, like, you know, I think Hubs hits the nail on the head. He's 4 years in. You know, if you told me when he took over he was going to be able to have this amount of success, I'd have told you you're crazy. They've done a nice job of flipping it. How do they, as Hub said, take the next step?
Last question. It's going to go to Brandon_SV. Was Eckler taking out the road recruiting because Chop was just a better recruiter or because Heupel knew he was a flight risk?
Because Chop was a better recruiter.
Did Eckler's contract expire before leaving or did he renew it with a low buyout?
He, nothing was signed. Nothing was officially done. I think there was a gentleman agreement in place, but no contract was done. So there's no buyout situation there.
Is Ellerby on the road recruiting?
Yes.
Okay. And then I lied. This will be the last one. What is the benefit of hiring Chop since he's already had such a huge emphasis in recruiting and now you can have as many on the field coaches as you want? If Tennessee were to hire Chop to fill that role, what is the benefit there?
So you don't lose it.
Yeah. I mean, like, you think you still sit there and, you know, be okay not getting passed over? Like, what if you get passed over for your job, what do? You just go sit there? Some people do. Some people don't. So, like, again, like, it's a risky play if you decide not to promote Chop. You know, and I understand, like, you know, a couple of the people on the board were talking about it. I mean, you know, you can argue either way. But, I mean, like, you know, if you like what he brings to your program, the common sense move here is to promote Chop and figure out the special teams as a group, which they've kind of been doing anyway.
Yeah. Big thanks as always for sending in your questions every Thursday morning here on the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. It's presented by our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999. That phone number is 865-524-5888. You can also visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Got a lot going on right now. Recruiting never stops. Basketball season, a big week this week, and of course hitting the road on Saturday to face Oklahoma. Baseball season about a week away from opening day. All those notes, coverage, reports, all that and more is over at VolQuest.com and on the General's Quarters. For Rob Lewis, Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane. Thank you so much for joining us here on the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.